The Pewter Nation podcast is presented by Westshore Financial, the official financial sponsors of PewterReport.com. For life insurance, investment, and retirement strategies, Westshore Financial's Chris Garrido can help you plan for the future and protect your family's finances. Call Chris at 813-434-0037 for a free, no-obligation conversation today. And now, get ready for the new Pewter Nation podcast.72hourprint.com is the official print partner of PewterReport.com. For printing, signage, and apparel needs, contact our partners at 888-72-HR-PRINT or 72hourprint.com. That's 72hrprint.com. Welcome, Pewter Report readers and listeners, to another edition of the Pewter Nation podcast. I am Mark Cook, along with Mr. Scott Reynolds, my boss.
Hello.
Mr. Taylor Nutchecker Jenkins.
How we doing?
And producer extraordinaire, who's getting some on-the-job training today. His name is Mr. Matthew Matera.
Hello, everybody.
Or Matera. How do you pronounce that?
Matera.
Is the M silent? Is it just Atera?
Nope. It's okay. Still there.
Still there.
Matt.
And another special guest who's helping us with our audio engineering is we are striving to improve the audio quality of these Pewter Nation podcasts. Our man from the PewterCast, Mr. Brent Allen. How are you, Brent?
Doing good, Mark. Good to be here with you guys today.
Thanks for flying down this morning from Jacksonville.
Boy, my arms are tired.
They look tired.
Yes.
They look
especially
tired.
Carrying all this weight through that 3.5-hour trip.
I wasn't going to say anything about that.
Did you hit any rain coming down? A little thunderstorm action? Tis the season in Florida.
There was a very, very bad accident on North 75 that will probably make the news tonight. So
yeah. You caused it?
Really bad. Don't tell anyone that.
Okay.
Wait, what were you doing? What do you go, 10 to 75 when you come here?
No, I come down through Gainesville and through Stark and kind of weave my way around and pick up 75 and shoot straight down.
Nice. Do you ever stop at that Captain D's Seafood in Stark?
I do.
I do, too. Every time I go to Jacksonville. Yes.
Is this the last Captain D's around?
Yes. It's where I go to the bathroom and then leave.
Oh.
That's all that happens.
They got some good green beans there. Anyway, no one really cares about our food habits.
Yeah,
I've got some funny stories about driving through Stark. But anyway, we'll pass those along for another time. Appreciate you joining us and helping us out with our engineering, our sound quality. It is the off season, right? We talked about the off season starts when the season ends, but there's always something going on. Right now, it's a dead zone around One Buccaneer Place.
Well, but not really. This is an interesting little twist. We were having a chat outside in the hallway here at One Buccaneer Place with Mike Edwards and Sean Murphy Bunting.
I call him just Sean Bunting. I refuse to do the Murphy.
Okay.
I told him that too.
Sean Murphy Bunting.
Yeah. You do what you want.
Yeah. And both of those guys are here along with all the other rookies, which is a vast departure from what other coaching staffs used to do. So the veterans got to go bye-bye for the summer last week.
O.J. Howard's in Jamaica, by the way, right now, if you follow him on Instagram.
He's having a damn good time.
I'm a little concerned.
Yeah.
It is Jamaica.
Well, it's better than the Dominican right now for Americans.
Well, that's true. Good point.
Just saying. But so the rookies are here for another 2 weeks. So they're getting some extra film sessions and coaching sessions. So the veterans were excused for the summer, but the rookies have another 2 weeks to go before their summer break, which is interesting.
And I was wondering about that. Is that legal? Are they violating NFL policies? Is Bruce Arians going to get this team fined?
No.
How does that work?
I think there's a stipulation in there because was it Schiano or Lovie Smith? One of those two regimes, they had the rookies come in a week before training camp to get them reacclimated and all that. So I think what Bruce and his staff is doing right now is they are getting it done right after the mini camp. And
they're doing some community stuff, again, following someone on social media. Looked like yesterday they were at a fire station somewhere and probably going to go visit some hospitals and different things like that. So that's good. Get them acclimated. And they're still going to have at least a month of time off between the mandatory mini camp and when training camp starts, even with this extra couple weeks hanging around here in Tampa Bay. You know what else is good?
What's good?
Team can keep an eye on these guys.
Sure. Absolutely.
They're young guys with a lot of money now.
Well, some of them,
Tampa
some
can
of
be very dangerous.
Some of them haven't been signed yet.
Yeah, that's true. So, their agents are paying them right now. Right. Like, but you're going to pay me. They're writing IOUs.
Yeah, they're fronting some money. Yep. Exactly.
I remember an old baseball coach used to tell me that Tampa was the worst place. Like, if you were drafted by the Yankees, Tampa was the worst place you could go because you were 19 years old with a big signing bonus, and they're known for their strip clubs and nightlife.
Strip clubs in Tampa?
Where?
I don't know. What are you talking about?
I wouldn't know
about.
These are his words.
What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Were there any strip clubs in Tampa?
Nah, I don't think there's any.
I haven't seen any.
I think he's
lived here 24
like
years.
Orlando or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely ain't thinking about Orlando. Yeah. I don't think about them.
I don't think there's any strip clubs in Tampa.
No. No, definitely not. No. No, definitely
there's
not.
That Mons Venus place, but that's not in Tampa. That's...
No, that's a medical facility.
Yeah.
Anatomy, physiology.
Right.
You go in, they show you where it is. Anyway, all right, talking about anatomy and physiology, Bucks uniform, Scott, has been a big topic of conversation the last week or so,
really has.
Particularly on Twitter. You know, there was a story we just put up on pewterreport.com today, which is Thursday, about how the Buccaneers uniforms were voted some of the worst in the NFL. I was shocked to see they weren't the worst.
Yeah. Well, the other thing too is, I guess Sporting News has done the story on the best uniforms, the best throwbacks or whatever.
Right.
And the Buccaneers are like the best throwback. And how times have changed,
golly.
Right? Because
people could not,
they could
wait,
not wait
to get
rid
of the orange and white.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. And so I don't know what's transpired between then and now to all of a sudden make those retro creamsicle uniforms like look so cool. And I've always liked them. I thought when the Bucks did the throwback game with Josh Freeman in 2009, and I think they did another one with Shiano. You know, I think
there's been a couple more
games. Yeah. I like
one where
that
against the Saints where Vincent Jackson had a 104-yard reception and didn't score.
95
remember
yards.
That?
Yes, 95 yards.
Got tackled and they couldn't
punch
it in.
And they didn't punch it in, exactly, yeah. So, but I find it funny because I like the throwbacks. I don't mind the throwbacks. I don't know that I'd want them to return full on.
I would. You know me, I'm a 76er.
Yeah. But for me, I wouldn't mind that throwback. And there's always, and I saw you have like a little mini rant on Twitter about this. We've answered the question 100 times.
100,
yes.
Maybe 101 now.
Yes, the NFL has a rule that because of the concussion lawsuits that the NFL has had to endure, and yes, I know that colleges change helmets out every week, right? Especially if you're Oregon. Teams like that have Nike backing and you have multiple helmets. In the NFL, it's a different story. They want you to have one helmet
that's fitted
before the season, and that is your helmet. And that way, what happens is the league takes away the excuse of, oh, well, I got a concussion during the throwback week because you made me wear a different helmet for throwback, right? So it's taking away that argument, which I think kind of sucks. I think it's kind of dumb, but it's the NFL's rule. So when you see teams like the Broncos do the throwback, keep in mind that blue helmet that the Broncos have is darker shade than the original Bronco blue, but at least they can pull it off by taking the decal off and putting the big D with the horse blowing the little snot.
Smoke.
That, it looks like snot.
Mm-hmm.
It's snot.
It's Colorado. Rocket. It's definitely smoke.
Okay. Well, it is now.
Can I chime in as the only one around this table who's actually allowed to be a fan?
Sure. Go for it.
Of this team?
Yes.
Yeah.
So two things. One, about the helmet, I've heard for years that they're only allowed to have one helmet.
Right.
I don't think that ever translated in my brain until this year. It's literally the same singular helmet from week to week to week. It's
correct.
Not like they go get fitted and they have 15 of those helmets
correct.
That are that size.
Right.
It's the same helmet.
That is the same helmet all season long.
Now, as far as the jerseys, though, and the throwbacks, I was not a fan until that Tony Dungy, they had just changed the uniform.
1997.
Years. So a little over 20 years.
Yep.
I'm still consider myself, I guess, a veteran as a fan. Mm-hmm. But this has been the generation that I've known.
Yep.
I don't mind the creamsicle throwbacks for a game.
Right. I'm the same
I don't want them to come back all the time.
Yeah.
However, if I get a throwback, I want those throwbacks to that kind of Super Bowl era jersey.
And I think that's coming.
Yeah, we spoke with
Joel Glazer.
Joel Glazer at the NFL owners meeting in Phoenix, and he kind of hinted at that. He didn't want to come out and say anything, but he said there are some things in the works, and what we kind of garnered by that was that, you know, a Super Bowl throwback, you know, 2002 type uniform, which is again basically the same color helmet, not exactly the same because that helmet didn't have the flake in it and and the face mask that was pewter, right. But they can pull it off by changing the decals, and then of course the jerseys and the pants and those things they can easily replicate.
But here's the thing: I'm a little surprised they didn't do that when they put John Gruden and Malcolm Glazier.
Yeah.
I think that would have been the perfect time to have the throwback game, right? When you put those guys in the Ring of Honor that year,
right?
That would have been an ideal time.
It's a little weird for me because I think all three uniforms, I feel a lot of the same way. Like, if you're going to bring a throwback back, I think the creamsicles would look good for one game. Mm-hmm. I don't know how I'd feel about a full-time rebrand. I think they're great for the era. I don't think they would look great today.
Yeah.
And when you look at the new uniforms, sans the obvious font.
The clock
numbering.
Yeah.
I love the new. I think the new uniforms look great.
I have no problem with them. They've really grown on me.
Don't like the orange. I think the orange is a great accent piece. I think the darker, like, kind of gunmetal gray pants and helmet look better than the old pewter. I think the new logo, where it's kind of more defined and a much cleaner little skull and flag, is 100% better than the Super Bowl era one.
Yeah, I agree.
So it's like I think each uniform kind of has their wins and losses
of the Buccaneers in that old,
the old logo. The old flag logo.
It reminds me of the
skull.
Things you guys used to sell at Buccaneer Heaven, the kids' uniforms.
It's
you know what I mean?
Yes.
And we bought Douglas a set of those, but it looks to me kind of like a kids' version compared to today. It's particularly the helmet because the flag is small. Everything's smaller on the helmet. And it just, you know, I love the new helmets. I think the helmets and that decal is the best in the NFL.
Yeah, I agree.
Even the Bucks on the sleeve, it's real sharp and kind of angular. Right. I think all of that looks great.
But what the hell were they thinking with
the numbering? Is just the only thing.
There's not,
give them, like,
I have
the
not
Seahawks
met one
number,
single person who likes those numbers.
Agreed.
Yeah. If you can give them a font like the Seahawks, I think they actually go from, like, one of the worst ranked uniforms in the league to one of the top ranked uniforms in the league.
I also think it's a little cool, too, how with their uniform selection, they can mix it up a little bit with the socks. Like, I'm not a fan of the all-white look.
I know you hate that.
I can't stand that. I hate that. Well, here's the thing. If you're the Colts, guess what? Your colors are blue and white.
Dallas wears white home jerseys.
Okay, that's fine.
Which is
but
weird,
they don't wear white pants.
They, do.
They don't wear white pants. They wear the silver pants to match the helmet. So my whole thing is, if you have two colors and one of them is white, then by all means, like, go all white. But if you have colors and the Bucks colors are red and pewter, like, white is an accent color. It should not be the full-on uniform. And I don't buy this whole thing of, well, we want to make it easier for those 1 o'clock games. Listen, Florida State plays in garnet and gold at noon kickoffs in Tallahassee, which is hotter than Tampa.
Yep.
And gee, those college kids seem to do okay thumping people. Well, I mean, not recently. Not recently, Mark. But I'm just
saying. One out of every 40 years, they have a bad year. It's okay.
Yeah, but you catch my drift, though?
Like, never went 4-8.
This team, for some reason, says, well, we're going to go all white for, like, a quarter or half the season, and I just don't like it.
USF wears dark green. UCF wears black. Miami wears dark green. I think they're okay.
But I think it's cool, though, that at least they can, like, change the socks up. They can go orange socks, pewter socks, red socks. It's a little different. I have no problem with the new uniforms.
It'd be interesting to see if Bruce, you know, what his thoughts are on this, because who decides what the uniform combination is?
The Glazers. The Glazers and Nike,
I know ultimately
you mean like
for
on game day.
Yeah.
I think that's a coach's call.
Because didn't Dirk Cutter let him decide
one week? Yeah, the players decide.
He was like, you can wear red if you want. Do we want to wear red at home or something? He asked him that. I think I remember that.
Sam Weish wanted to go orange on orange one year.
He did.
His last
game. That was the last game, the Detroit Lions game in 1995.
Yeah.
The Lions came down here and waxed the Buccaneers. And Hardy Nickerson.
Year.
Yeah.
Hardy, turned into 7-9.
It did. Hardy Nickerson and Paul Gruber said no.
No,
pick
it's
one.
Not happening.
Pick one. Orange tops, orange bottoms.
Now I think about it, I would have loved to have seen orange on orange. That would have been kind of cool.
That would have been the ultimate creamsicle there. That's...
The only thing that I never liked about the throwback games is, and I'm telling you, from an old guy who remembers the original orange, it was a lighter shade orange on those jerseys that first year. And what year was Freeman drafted?
2009.
Yeah, that first year against the Packers. That was
a
lighter color orange.
Correct.
It wasn't, you know, and
wasn't as rich. I agree.
Yeah. It kind of looked like they had hung it by a window and let it fade for, you know, a couple years in the sunlight. But anyway, I'm a big fan of that. I love when they turn the stadium back into that and they play the old.
They did
a
fantastic job. That whole thing, they played 70s music, the big huge pom-poms.
Players
were
doing
cocaine
at halftime.
Yes, having cigarette breaks.
Yeah, they had beer on the sidelines for the players.
That was fantastic.
That was awesome.
You know what else is awesome? The fact that this Pewter Nation podcast is presented by Chris Garrido at West Shore Financial, the official financial sponsor of PewterReport.com. Listen, I'm going to admit it. I was that guy. That guy who thought he had enough life insurance. That guy who didn't put nearly enough money away for my retirement. Guys, I procrastinated. Don't be like me. Call Chris Garrido and let his team at West Shore Financial come up with a sound strategy to protect your family's future. Chris told me it's never too late to bolster your retirement and life insurance, and he's right. So if you're like me, Chris will put you on the path to sound investment and retirement strategies, but don't wait. I've known Chris for over a decade. I was a client of his before West Shore Financial became the sponsor of this Pewter Nation podcast. I trust him with my retirement. Call Chris Garrido today at 813-434-0037 for a complimentary, no obligation, preliminary conversation, and you'll be glad that you did.
You know what? I'm going to make it a point now that it's kind of the off season. I'm going to give Chris a call.
Because you have some time, yeah.
I've been doing some risky things lately to try and, you know, secure my family's financial
future.
We
hear about those on a weekly basis.
You know, and it's probably not the best idea. I don't know if I should admit this, but lately I've been a mule runner from Canada smuggling in erectile dysfunction drugs.
Yeah.
That's probably not the smartest, soundest way to
Or no. Safest. I'm just saying.
Well,
I guess it's not the worst balloon you could smuggle.
That's true. I mean, if that burst, I mean, it's only bonus
for me. Day.
You're a happy guy for quite
problem
a while.
The problem is, I have to account to these guys each pill when I get back here. So what am I going to say? 300 of them blew up in the balloon?
Yeah.
Anyway, where's your sisters?
You wouldn't need to tell them. You could show them.
Yeah, exactly.
They'd know when you showed up.
Well, if it lasts more than 4 hours, see a doctor for sure. All right. Other things to talk about again. You know, we're going to get to your questions. That's something that we asked you guys to do, and we had
and y'all came through.
Nice turnout with some questions earlier.
We got about half a dozen questions we're going to answer in the second half of this podcast. So we appreciate you guys. We're going to do this the entire summer. So this is your chance, Pewter Nation, to ask us anything. Football related, not football related.
That's cool. That means I don't have to do the Monday mailbag anymore.
No, it's just it's another more? it's an audio version of different questions answered. Rather than the money mail.
And you get somebody else's opinion besides myself.
That's right.
Because no one really cares about my opinion that much, apparently.
Well, I tell you what, nobody told Bruce Arians that it rains at 4 o'clock during the summer in Tampa, apparently.
Yeah, Lovie Smith tried that. Remember that?
Yeah, first day of practice year was rained out.
Yeah, we ended up going, no, it didn't get rained out. We went to USF at 9 o'clock at night.
Oh, you did? I didn't.
Yeah, I know. Scott's like, I'm out of here. I'm a veteran.
I didn't make it.
We waited it out from about 1:30 to about 6, and then ended up taking buses over to USF.
Yeah.
Because this field was completely underwater.
Yeah.
The Buccaneers released their training camp schedule, if you don't know what Scott's talking about. And it is loaded with 4 o'clock practices this
year. We get 9 of them at 4 o'clock this year. And there will be some 4 o'clock games. Bruce wants to make sure his players get to sleep in.
Is that what it's about?
Yeah.
I know we talked about that. He wants to be acclimated to this, but...
Sleep in, get a good breakfast, you know.
Show up at 1 o'clock.
Yeah, come on.
Put your uniforms on,
four.
Be ready at 4. Yeah.
So 9 practices at 4 o'clock, 3 practices at 6:30.
You know what actually he's getting them acclimated to is lightning delays.
True.
Where they're going to have to go back in the locker room for 2 hours.
That's right.
And get used to that, because that's what's going to happen a lot of these 4 o'clock practices.
Yeah. And then he's got 2 practices at 10 a.m. That's the joint practices with the Dolphins. Okay, that's reasonable.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense.
You can't put 180 players in that indoor facility.
Exactly.
Because they're going to have both 90-man rosters here.
Yeah, and you mentioned the indoor. Lovie didn't have that, but Bruce will have that.
Right.
And how much you want to bet at least half of those 9 practices at 4 p.m. will wind up in the indoor.
Yeah,
right?
Which, you know, it's not a bad thing for us. We prefer that because it's air-conditioned. But and I wonder... The seating capacity indoor compared to what the seating capacity is, and they are putting the tents back up, the covered
with the bleachers
tents this
and all
year.
That. That's good. Yeah.
Yeah, I know a lot of fans were upset. It was miserable last year when they did that.
Yeah.
You know, just sitting out in the blazing sun.
Yeah, bring a chair.
No cover.
Sit on the lawn.
Yeah, it was awful. And then people were bringing umbrellas in, and people were complaining they couldn't see. And some people were getting, deer tick bites on their butt from sitting on the grass.
Or chiggers.
I don't know if any of that's true.
I don't think that's the case.
But they may have got a rash, grass rash on the ass. Say that 3 times fast.
I think you tried and failed.
Didn't work.
And then they have one lone practice at 8 a.m., which is early. But the thing is a lot of the coaches that have been here have had those morning practices, mm-hmm. have had those 8:45 or 8:15
I'm just
going to
let
starts.
You know now, Scott, I'm not going to be at those 8 o'clock practices.
Okay.
That's just too early
for me.
You
can ask off for that one. That's
fine.
Yeah,
I'm going to go ahead and put in my timer off request now.
Well, the thing is, you can – I'll tell you what. I'll handle all the 8 o'clock practices. Mm-hmm. You can handle all the 4 o'clock practices.
Deal. Wait, okay? No. That's not equal. It's like 1 to 8 or no. That's,
1 to 9.
Yeah.
Yeah, what do you guys think about these practices being in the afternoon?
I mean, it's interesting. He definitely said, I mean, want to get them acclimated to the weather they're going to be playing in, the time they're going to be playing in, because you don't play games at 10 a.m.
You do it
so
if you're in London.
I think it's interesting.
That's right.
It's different. It's definitely going to be something that, I mean, rain's going to be problematic.
You know, I think it's going to be...
That's going to be a huge issue.
I think you're going to get some better attendance because people can, hey, I can get out of work at 3 o'clock... But who wants to show up here at 8:30 in the morning or 8:45?
Have to miss a whole day at work, yeah.
And even if you go into the office, you're going to smell.
How much of this was like maybe Brian Ford and the Blazers wanting better attendance out here? Or is this all Bruce Arians controlling the schedule?
I think it's kind of Bruce. I think it's really kind of Bruce saying, you know, I think he really is adamant about getting these guys on kind of a game day type schedule or getting used to the weather deal. But I'll be honest with you. Look. It's probably a little cooler at 4 o'clock than it is at 8:45. It's a different type of heat. The temperature may be a little higher.
As long as it rains early.
Yes.
If it rains like 2 or 3 o'clock, and then it's cooler, but it's also a lot more humid,
then
too.
Then you get a little steamy, too.
Bad.
It's muggy.
Oh, my God. When you come out here right after the rain, it's still like 90 degrees as opposed to 97, but the humidity
You may get some cloud cover still, you know what I mean, and things like
bonus.
That. But you're right. If we get that 30-minute shower and then the sun pops back out.
Yeah, with the humidity.
Yeah, you're getting cooked. You're getting cooked for sure.
Speaking of cook, let's go to some questions.
Wait. Before we go to the questions, and I haven't broke this news yet, but I was able to find out when we got this training camp schedule that they're going to start and end each practice with a signal gun.
A signal gun?
Mm-hmm.
You mean like a flare gun?
Bingo.
Wow.
T.A. Mahoney's is the official provider of the Buccaneers practices for the start and end of each practice. They're going to shoot a flare gun off.
What?
I don't know that that's entirely true. But if they're considering doing that, then certainly T.A. Mahoney's would be the place to go if they were looking for flare guns.
Yes. Or if, say, for example, if you had any... boating needs, right?
Well, that's true.
Marine needs, boating needs.
And
you may have a boat trailer.
You may at 4 o'clock need some boating needs to float out of here after some of these rain showers. So T.A. Mahoney's is the one-stop shop for all of your marine needs from, as Scott said, boat trailers to flare guns to fishing tackle to apparel to sunglasses to fiberglass, do your own boat repairs, boat anchors, rope.
You said boat anchors. Go to Walmart and try to find a boat anchor.
That's what I'm
talking
about.
You're not
going to
do it. Where are you going to find a boat anchor? T.A. Mahoney's.
I mean, you can use a microwave and a piece of rope. Those are good boat anchors. But you want a real boat anchor that's going to look good on your boat, you go to T.A. Mahoney's. That's the place to go. Located 50th Street in Adamo, been in business since 1948, the year Scott Reynolds was born. So it's very easy remember that they are now 70 and a half years old. Family owned and operated. Go see Mike. Go see Mark. Go see Matt. The whole crew at T.A. Mahoney's. They'll take care of you. Personalized service from a great family and a great sponsor of the Pewter Nation podcast.
So I mentioned you and your namesake on Twitter as we delve into some questions. And if you want your question answered on the Pewter Nation podcast next week, just simply ask it on Twitter and give us a hashtag Pewter Nation, and we'll throw that question out and we'll have it answered next week. So this week's questions starts with Allie Cook.
Whoop whoop.
Yep.
Thanks, Mom.
At Cookie 1989. Asks, will you guys be coming over to my hometown of London for the Carolina game? I fear I'm going to see Gerald pick Jameis off the turf and apologize for his fourth sack of the day. Mark, can I get a shout-out from a fellow cook? You're a legend.
Wow, I didn't see that coming. But again, I thank you very much, Mother. Actually, we're not English, we're German. Actually, Cook's Irish, but anyway, point is yes, we will be in England, in London.
Yes, Mark Cook and I are going to London.
Lord willing and the creek don't rise, we'll be there. That's a long time between now. We could, I mean, who knows what could happen between now and then. It could be nuclear war, it could be a volcano erupt in Florida. There's a lot of different things. Earthquakes could prevent us from making it, or I could just completely chicken out and have a meltdown at the airport because I don't like flying.
It sounds like you're already
flying.
Having a meltdown right now.
I need a Xanax thinking about it, and we're 6 months away from October.
Well, I will make sure that we'll have plenty of adult beverages and Xanax on the plane.
Carry a ball peen hammer, too, so if I just lose it, you just knock me in the temple.
I can do that.
So I can sleep for about 10 hours. Isn't it like 38-hour plane ride, something like that?
It's not that. I think it's probably 12 to 14 hours over there.
Shut
maybe
up.
A little bit less.
It is not.
10 to 12.
Yeah. Maybe. No, I think it's like 8 to 10.
8 to 10. Okay.
That's still way too long. Problem I have with flying, I don't have any problem with flying. It's the crashing and burning and dying that I don't like.
Yeah,
flying is fine.
It doesn't sound fun.
Flying is easy. Right. And it's going to be over water.
Right.
So it's not like if your radiator overheats, the pilot can just pull it over, you know, on the nearest island and get work done.
Well, you know
we're
me
screwed.
And my fear of sharks. If the plane goes down, I'm swimming to the bottom of the ocean. I'd be damned if I'm going to be shark bait. It's not happening.
Speaking to the man who has a shark tattoo on his leg.
I do.
It's a
constant reminder not to go in the water.
That's your one fear in life. That would be like if I put an elevator tattoo on my leg because I hate elevators more than anything in the world.
Listen, I was circled by a shark at a young age.
No,
okay?
You were not. You're
I was
from
too.
Kansas. There's no shark.
It was in Cape Hatteras, North Carolina. We were vacationing.
Oh, please.
It's true. Ask my
dad.
This
story is about as believable as you blocking a punt in high school.
I did block a punt. I did.
I think you broke that finger picking your nose or something.
I
don't know. Where's the film?
It was just like 1986. It wasn't film.
Oh.
I've got Polaroid pictures. That's
oh, good.
All right, so anyways.
Did your mom take them and stick them under her arm to get them developed faster? Remember that?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Wave them real fast and stick them under your arm. These right. young kids have no idea what we're talking about.
What do you young guys think? Do you think that Gerald McCoy is going to sack Jameis 4 times?
Not in 5 years.
Okay.
Well, if he lines up against last year's Alex Kappa, he might get there 5.
Okay. I don't know.
Wow.
We'll have to
wait.
You're
going to need to see some development, but
throwing,
I've heard that Alex Kappa has made some big strides. We have yet to see him in pads, so I'm going to hold off judgment until that happens.
Could he have made any worse strides? He had to have made some big strides. Couldn't have made any smaller strides.
He could make some small strides, unfortunately.
Like what? How?
Just
how
not,
can he be any worse?
Just not be good.
Well, you mean like last year?
Yeah. All right. Timo, at German.
Wait, shout
Buccaneer.
Out. Allie Cook. Here's your shout out to London, my friend. Thank
there you.
You and I expect a full Beatles tour when I get there, if I make it.
All right. At German Buccaneer says,
my man,
are you guys going to be in London for the? I'm sorry. Let me start over.
Won't I leave in London, London?
No, that's not even.
Are
German.
You guys going to be in London for the game? Are there any plans for an event for your overseas followers? So yes, we answered that before. We will be at the London game.
Maybe.
Okay. And we have yet to organize it, but we've talked about it. Mark and I have. We're going to have like a big bash.
We didn't
get
talk
together.
About this.
Yeah, we did.
When?
Yes. We talked. We're going to have like an event.
I don't remember any of this.
Yeah, we're going to show up and people are going to buy us beer.
Oh, yes. That event. Yes.
Yes. That's the event.
Somebody's taking me to Abbey Road Studios.
Very cool.
We're going to walk across the street and get a picture taken where the Monkees had that done on their famous
That's
album.
Right. Yeah. Hey, we're the Monkees. That's right. Is that by the last train to Clarksville?
Mm-hmm.
Is it
yep.
in the same vicinity?
Yep, okay. Same. Clarksville's right here in London. Huh?
Meet our 2 leaders, and after 17 beer tastings, you can buy Scott a beer.
Yes.
Once he makes his decision.
That's right.
I heard London beer is like...
That's how you play the game, my friend.
It's not like... It's a little different than American beer.
I like
beer.
Guinness, so I'm all down for some Guinness.
Isn't that Irish?
It's that UK. English? It's UK.
Okay.
All right. We're going to go to at Chef Aaron 26. Do you believe the last coaching staff's hindrance on this team's success had a lot to do with ego, meaning Cutter's jealousy over Munkin's success as a play caller, Smith playing players out of position to fit his scheme, Warhop's offensive line confusion? So what he's asking is, you know, did these guys just not know what they were doing based on ego? Was Cutter jealous of Munkin's success? Was Mike Smith playing guys out of position just because it's his scheme and he wanted them to play how he wanted them to play rather than having them play how they could play best? What are your thoughts?
Yes, yes, no, yes. I'm just kidding. I don't know that there was any jealousy between Monken and Dirk Cutter. I think they were good friends.
Yeah.
I think from an ego standpoint, yes, Dirk didn't necessarily want to give up the play calling duties, but he also understood that he needed to handle more aspects of the team than strictly being an offense coordinator with the title of head coach, which is essentially what he was the first 2 years. I think he saw the writing on the wall that this was going to be his last year, and he needed to make some changes. Usually, though, those changes happen when a coach takes the play calling duty back.
So right.
He figures, hey, man, I'm going down with the ship. I'm going to do it my way.
Yep.
So Lovie Smith do that, and Leslie Frazier, who had some very interesting words about Lovie Smith that we can't really repeat still.
Yeah.
One of these days when we write the book, we'll include the Leslie Frazier, Lovie Smith
chapter.
It'll
be a chapter, yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty good, though. And if you guys remember Leslie Frazier, most laid back, uncontroversial, you would never expect him to.
Just a great guy.
Anybody. Yeah, yeah, he was not real happy about that situation. I don't know that there was a whole lot of jealousy involved here. I think it was just Dirk Cutter being in a little bit over his head to a degree as a head coach. I think he's a wonderful coordinator. The numbers speak for themselves when you look at the offensive numbers and the output. If there was any animosity or any kind of general internal issues, I think it can go back to the fact that Dirk Cutter wasn't a Jameis guy. They drafted Jameis before, you know, Dirk Cutter was the head coach, before he really had any say in this. And he admitted that
he preferred
Marcus Mariota, which makes zero sense when you look at when you look at Dirk Cutter's type of offense.
I know.
That's not an offense that Marcus Mariota is going to thrive in.
Right.
So he got the right guy for his offense, if you're talking about those two guys. But I mean, if there was any type of internal struggle or anything like that, I think there was, maybe that's where the issue was from some of the things that we've heard since Dirk has been let go anyway.
From what we've heard too, the relationship that Jameis has with Bruce Arians, Byron Leftwich, and Clyde Christensen is already better than it was at any point in time since Jameis has been here.
Because he's wanted. Arians, listen. Whether you like Jameis or not, it doesn't really matter. Bruce Arians liked Jameis Winston. Jameis Winston was a selling point to Bruce Arians coming off the couch and coming back to this team.
Agreed.
I don't know that if, okay, just take him off the thing. If it's Blaine Gabbert and Ryan Griffin, I don't think Bruce Arians is coming back to coach his football team.
Right. Or even if Ryan Fitzpatrick was the guy here.
Yeah,
you know, Jameis, let's say Jameis just stubbed his toe so much last year that they said, you know what, we're going to ride Fitz and we're going to see how long we can, you know, milk this cow. I don't think that's what does the trick for Arians to come here. But you're right, Jameis Winston was a huge selling point.
So he's wanted. So, I mean, that makes sense that the relationship is good. Now, one thing I brought up on 620 yesterday, the only kind of concern that I have about this coaching staff and Jameis Winston is the three voices Jameis Winston hears from Bruce Arians, Byron Leftwich, and Clyde Christensen, who probably should have the most influence in Jameis Winston
because he is their position
coach.
Yeah.
Again, but also, as I said on 620, Bruce Arians also has a couple of Super Bowl rings, a couple of AP Coach of the Year awards, so he knows what he's doing. So if he, you know, at the end of the day, it's probably going to be Bruce's message in Jameis's ear more than anybody's.
You know what? I think it might be Byron's. And the interesting thing,
or Clyde's, though, because I don't. Well,
but here's
I don't know
thing.
How the dynamic's going to play out.
I can't remember if it was at the luxury suite event. We had a conversation with Bruce. Maybe it was even at a press conference, but he said that he tries to stay out of the room.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And so to me, I'm almost thinking, all right, if I'm Jason Light and I'm bringing in the quarterback whisperer, right, to work with Jameis and be the head coach, and I'm hearing that Bruce is like, well, I try to stay out of the room because you don't want too many voices in there. Well, no, I want your voice in the room because you're the guy.
Say when he was speaking with Schefter the other day that he does hear from all three, because he said when he was talking about Bruce, he said Bruce coaches Jameis and Bruce coaches Clyde and Bruce coaches Byron, and he described it as it's all like parallel energy.
Okay,
it's all kind of the same. Similar messages coming from all the guys because it's Bruce's kind of Bruce is the umbrella that's covering.
That's got to be the key, though, Taylor. It has to be one message. It can't be three separate messages for a guy who's going into such a crucial year.
Right,
he's got to hear one focus.
And you know what? I have complete confidence that's happening because Bruce has this loyal coaching staff where he doesn't bring on new people. Mm-hmm. You have to have a track record, a background with him as a player, as a former coach, whatever.
Yeah, you can't have Clyde saying, listen, I know what Bruce said, but here, this is what we're going to do.
Nope.
I mean, I do that with our interns all the time.
Of course.
Listen, don't listen to what Scott says.
Yes.
I'm in charge here.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
That's right. You undermine me all the time.
Every day of the week.
Yeah.
And I don't know what to do, so I just get uncomfortable and walk away. Pray for the best.
Because you're not an intern anymore.
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
We gave you a new title.
Yeah.
That was back in the day.
All right. Let's go to at All Hands Galley.
All Hands Galley should probably go get a burger and a beer at Ford's Garage, don't you think?
I think so. Yes.
Because Ford's Garage, guess what, guys? New location down in Wellington, Florida. Quickly, somebody here tell me where Wellington is.
South.
Go.
South.
South where?
Florida.
Yes. Down south somewhere.
Down south.
Near around Palm Beach area.
South of Tampa.
North of Miami. South
it
around that area. It's down in the south. Yeah, West Palm Beach area. I didn't know where that was, but they have a brand new location. They just opened up this week. Guess what else? Bradenton's coming. Daytona Beach is coming. Jacksonville eventually is coming. Maybe. We're not sure about that. Yeah, probably not, actually.
We're
going to
put a good word in for you, Brent.
Say what we'll do. We'll just mail you some burgers every once in a while.
I'll say, we've raved about the nachos, the beer, the burgers there.
Yeah.
I went the other day and I had their wings. Really good.
Really?
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I've heard that too.
I got the wings.
They were buffalo wings, but they had like... I don't even know how to describe
it. Wait.
It like
first of all, you just lied because buffaloes don't have wings. Next.
They were buffalo style wings.
Oh, okay.
And I don't really know how to describe it. I mean, they were traditional buffalo wings, but they were just, they were a little sputtin.
Breaded?
They weren't
sputtin?
Breaded. They were naked. Like, I want to say spicy, but not like a hot spicy. They had like a little extra kick to them.
What does that mean?
I think he said smutton.
Smitten?
No, I was just trying to, you know, get my words out and they didn't really work for me there.
Okay.
See, it's that new English language you're trying to
learn.
They left me
stumbling over a way to describe their wings.
That must be good.
That's good.
That's
a good recovery.
Exactly right.
Well, I'm going to have to go try out their wings.
It wasn't leaving me stumbling over my
wings. What's the website? Where could I go to find out all these locations?
ForgeGarageUSA.com.
There we go.
You can check it out, ForgeGarage.com. ForgeGarageUSA.com. All of the locations have their own specific menus. A lot of the same stuff, but each one of them has a little bit different twist. You can check it out. Find them online. Burgers, beers, great salads. Cliff, our photographer, had a wonderful Cobb salad. He loved it the other day. I had somebody else tell me that it's the best Cobb salad they ever had was at Ford's Garage. So if you're trying to eat healthy, Brent, you might want to try out the Cobb salad.
All Hands Galley asks us, besides Deion Buchanan, who else is going to play the moneybacker role in this defense? Carlton Davis, Jamel Dean, Sean Murphy Bunting, and Ryan Smith are all 6 foot plus in terms of size, length, and speed. Is VH3, Vernon Hargraves, the odd man out and possibly cut or traded? Let's go to the first part of the question, which is about Deion Buchanan as the money backer. The money backer.
Did you just call him Dan Buchanan?
Deion.
I didn't think you said Dan.
Deion?
Dan?
Oh, Danny? Oh, not again.
All right, Andy, go
ahead. Anyways, is it, with Buchanan being the money backer, right? And what that means, if you're not familiar, when the Bucks are in nickel defense, they're going to have two linebackers. One of them is going to be the money backer. The other one is the Mike. And I think that this role is going to be like a little in flux because I think that they're going to want to get Devin White on the field as much as possible.
Yeah.
And you don't want to take Lavonte David off the field as much as possible. So I think before they drafted Devin White, they had plans of maybe having Deion Buchanan as that guy because this role is kind of like a quasi-safety linebacker. It's basically a coverage linebacker. And I don't know that they're going to have that role per se with as much gusto as maybe they had thought because of the arrival of Devin White. I think you want White and Lavonte David on the field as much as possible.
So you're saying Buchanan might have been a luxury, not a luxury, but a backup,
like a backup plan
in case they didn't get what they wanted in the draft. I don't know. I think it's going to be hard to take Buchanan off the field in whatever role he plays because of his production in Arizona with Todd Bowles and under Bruce Arians. I mean,
and he kind of plays strong safety too.
Yeah,
they might have a need there at strong safety, and Deion Buchanan has played safety before. So,
well,
something to keep an eye on in training.
In that kind of mold, I think you could maybe see Justin Evans, if healthy, slip in there a little bit.
Stop talking about Justin Evans. He's losing his whole leg.
Which one?
He went from his toe to his heel to opposite
his
leg
toe on one foot to his heel on the
other foot.
He's got two bum
heels. I'm telling people right now, do not count on Justin Evans.
If he shows
year.
Up, then great.
Yep,
if
it's
he plays,
a bonus.
That's awesome.
And it's the same way with JPP. I was asked on 620 about him joining the team. I said, look, I think you go into the season expecting not to have JPP, and if he shows up in November, then you got one hell of a fresh, hungry pass rusher that can really help push a team
right.
at playoff.
And that's what Kevin Minter told me for my last week's SR's Fab Five, where
Kevin's your go-to guy. You went to him last year.
Yeah.
And got a bunch of stuff on Bruce Arians before Bruce Arians' name was really even brought up.
Imagine that.
People can go back and look at the Fab Five in December of last year.
That's right.
Anyway,
that's how we roll.
Sorry, I mean to interrupt you. Now people are yelling at me on Twitter.
It's okay, Captain Interruption. It's only a matter of time before you showed up to save the day. So,
wearing my cape.
I think that.
What did Minter say?
What Minter said that. You got three guys in the contract here. You got Carl Nassib, who has, by all accounts, been super impressive this offseason. He's bigger, he's faster, he means business, et cetera.
Carl Nassib.
Carl Nasty. Carl Nasty. Nasty.
Yeah.
Nasty. And you got Noah Spence. We'll wait and see. I am taking a complete Missouri slogan, show me, before I get on the hype
not
train.
Not familiar with him.
He had a good rookie year a couple years ago, then nothing over the last 2 years. And then you've got Spence in a rookie year or in a contract year. You also have the newcomer Shaq Barrett. So between those three guys plus the rookie Anthony Nelson, it's not like they're not going to miss JPP, but the players believe that it's not going to be the huge devastating loss that some might predict it would be. I think Carl Nassib can get between 8 to 10 sacks this year. I wouldn't be surprised if Shaq Barrett gets between 4 to 6. If you can get 3 or 4 sacks from Anthony Nelson, if you can get 3 or 4 sacks from Noah Spence, you can kind of cobble together.
Get one sack from Vita Vea, that'd be nice.
No, he got 3 last year.
Just one.
I'm talking about
the
outside linebacker spots.
I know, I'm just kidding.
Okay. I mean, Vita Vea and Ndamukong Suh, they're going to be setting things up for these outside linebackers. So the second part of the question, Carlton Davis, Jamel Dean, Murphy Bunting, Ryan Smith, those are bigger guys. Is a smaller corner like Vernon Hargraves the odd man out? I don't think so, because his contract is guaranteed this year. It makes no sense to cut him or trade him because of the salary cap impact that you're going to take. If you cut the guy, there's no benefit from the cap to do so.
Right.
So if anything, if Vernon Hargraves gets beat out for a starting job, and if one of these rookies is even better, if he's down there with Ryan Smith on the depth chart and all of a sudden Vernon Hargraves is the fourth corner on this team, then honestly, if you have to turn to your fourth corner, and the Buccaneers have had to the last couple years with injuries.
Look, Brent Grimes, Vernon Hargraves, MJ Stewart, and Carlton Davis all missed games last year.
Exactly, yeah. So what I'm saying is if Vernon is the fourth best corner on the team and you have to play him because of injuries, he's going to be better than signing a Devontae Harris off the street like they had to do last year, or an Andrew Adams who played safety, right? So that's the one thing Jason Light couldn't stand was having to go find saviors on the street or trying to find saviors on the street in October and November to cover Julio Jones and Michael Thomas, right? Like, at least there's enough talent here, and it's young and unproven and raw, but at least these guys are going to be in the system. And yeah, it'd be a huge disappointment if Vernon is the fourth corner or the fifth corner this year. And that means that he probably almost guaranteed wouldn't get that fifth-year option next year.
And Hargreaves is a scheme fit. I mean, he is. I mean, it's been news since he came out of Florida. He's a little undersized.
Right.
He's not as fast as you would optimally like.
Yep.
But this is what he played in college. This same style of defense. Up, man on the line, make contact
press
the line of scrimmage.
Coverage,
press man coverage. And I think he's a lot more comfortable in the scheme. So he doesn't necessarily fit the prototype body that Todd Bowles and Bruce Arians have gone after and tried to get, but he does fit the scheme, which
that's
is a bonus.
Good point.
And I don't want to say, because mad respect to Ryan Smith. He's been around for a handful of years, and he's been thrown into some tough situations where he's had to be the top cornerback at some points. But Vernon Hargraves is probably just a better player.
Yeah.
He's just a more talented player.
Sure.
So I don't see, with Ryan Smith in the conversation, Vernon Hargraves ever being the last man out.
I agree. I think if anything, if Hargraves were to get beat out by Dean and Murphy Bunting and Carlton Davis, I think the lowest he would be fourth on the depth chart. If he's fourth on the depth chart this year, he's not going to be around next year for the fifth-year option.
Well, I think they're going to give Vernon every opportunity to be that starter, and they want him to be that starter because regardless of the amount of games he's missed, he's still a veteran and the veteran in that room.
Yeah.
And again, it doesn't matter how good of a rookie you are at the cornerback position. Yeah, I said Wookie. It doesn't matter.
Chewbacca?
Yeah. Woo. What does he sound like? Mm-hmm. It just sounded like somebody had a stroke when you did it, Scott. Do it again. No.
Alexander Nascimento, A-L-E-N-A-S-C, 12, asks, can you guys project now, just for fun, how many and which records Bucks players will break this season?
What?
Yeah, he wants to know which records the Bucks are going to break this year. I think...
Is Mike Evans close to any?
He's close to...
If Mike Evans or Jameis Winston are close to any.
He's close to James Wilder's record for all-time career receptions. I don't know that he gets it this year. I think it's like 100 and something away, and I think he's like a year and a couple games into 2020 before he breaks that. You know, I don't see any rushing records being broken by Peyton Barber or Rojo.
Peyton Barber is going to rush for 4,673 yards this year.
No,
overtake Wilder.
No. Well, I'm just even saying like single season records. Yeah. I don't think that happens.
What is the single season?
OJ might do it for a tight
end. Doug Martin, 14, 12.
Maybe OJ Howard do it for a tight end. If he just has a great, phenomenal season.
Yeah, he might. I mean, I don't see sack records getting broken. I don't see interception records getting broken.
You don't see Vita Vea getting 16 and a half sacks?
I don't. Not this year. Okay. No. Maybe down the road collectively over his career. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, the interesting thing is if you give Jameis Winston 16 games, right, because he played all 16 games as a rookie, had over 4,000 yards, then he backed it up. What 2 years after that with 4,090,
mm-hmm.
where he
no, he had two back to his first 2 years where it was over 4,000.
That's right,
yards.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So
which I think third all time behind like Peyton Manning and somebody else.
Like, I could see Jameis getting 4,100 or 4,200 yards,
right?
Because they're going to sling the ball. This is a deep shot down the field type of offense. You put Breshad Perriman in there catching some passes,
right?
That maybe DeSean Jackson wouldn't have jumped up and fought for or tried hard for. I could see Jameis. I mean, listen, Jameis Winston on any given Sunday can throw up for 300 yards,
right.
like nobody's business. And the only thing that might hinder that would be if the Buccaneers actually had a lead
and a
running game where they would like salt away a win in the fourth quarter rather than having to have Jameis throw for 150 yards in the fourth quarter to play catch up. So, you know, I don't know about that. So I can't think of any records that are going to be broken right off the bat.
No.
Nothing comes to mind. The second part of the question is, are you guys taking this next week off? No, we're actually doing a podcast.
Yeah, no, I'm Scott's taking a little time in the first week of July. I'm taking some in the middle of July.
The third part of the question is, any chance you guys are coming to Brazil?
If you buy the ticket, we might come.
Yes, for Carnival.
Yes.
We'll come
Carnival.
Down for Carnival. Carnival, yes.
Where is Brazil? Is that like, it's up around Vancouver?
No, it's South America.
Yeah, Australia, I remember now. Perfect.
And we're going to round out with another question from your worshiper, Allie Cook.
Again?
Yes, at Cookie 1989.
I swear this is really not my mom. I don't know anybody named Allie Cook. Is this a man or a woman with that name?
It's
Allie Marpet, but then there's our business operations manager, Allie.
Which is short for Allison.
Oh, yeah. Well, maybe this is short for Allison.
It may be.
Allison, send a picture. I want to see what you look like.
All right, this is interesting.
So does Taylor.
This is an interesting question. Who gets the most sacks this year, Gerald McCoy or Ndamukong Suh? Follow-up question. Are you guys happy that the Raiders are on Hard Knocks this year, or couldn't you care less? I personally can't wait to see our old coach, John Gruden, with Antonio Brown, et cetera. I think it will be must-view TV. I agree with the second half of that question. I think the Raiders, I think this is like the jackpot for Hard Knocks.
I might actually subscribe to HBO for that month to see that.
I've seen every Hard Knocks every year.
I didn't watch last year. I don't remember who was on. Oh, Cleveland.
Cleveland, yeah.
Was that good?
That
was fun.
Oh, yeah. It was really good.
I liked
good.
It. Yeah. Baker's
Carl awesome. Nassib was on there, too, doing his finance seminar for the players. It was really good.
Maybe you should see Chris Garrido.
He might, yeah. We should put Chris in contact with Carl.
Maybe a post-playing career.
Yeah. Maybe Carl Nassib could get a contract with Westshore Financial. Probably for not as much money as right. the Bucks or another team might pay. But, okay, so the first part of the question, and this will wrap up the podcast today. But who gets more sacks this year, Gerald McCoy in Carolina or Ndamukong Suh here in Tampa?
Go ahead, Taylor. Actually, you know what? Why don't you pass the microphone to Brent? He's falling asleep. Kind of.
Who gets more sacks, mm-hmm. Gerald or Ndamukong Suh?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Ndamukong Suh.
Why?
I'm a fanboy.
Okay.
And I'm here with the Buccaneers.
So you want him to get more sacks?
I do want him to get more sacks, but I think that from everything that I can tell, and you guys are way closer to this than I am, but with everything that I can tell with the new coaching staff, the new, like, whatever Todd Bowles is going to bring in, mm-hmm. and I know that we haven't been able to see anything through OTAs yet, because it's all shorts. You can't do anything in the trenches and see what's going on there.
Right.
But Ndamukong Suh, you know, with his attitude and what he brings, seems to fit whatever this new thing is that this coaching staff is going for.
Attack.
And even though he doesn't have Aaron Donald next to him this year, and I know a lot's been made about, oh, he only had so many sacks, but look who he had playing next to him.
Right. Well, and also Aaron Donald was playing the three tech, which is really the money position.
Yeah,
right.
That's where
Suh is going to be playing the three tech.
And I think Aaron Donald took some of Sue's sacks.
Right.
So I think Sue's going to be open. I think he'll get a lot more. I'm not overly familiar with Carolina's defense. I can't say whether they have a good defensive line.
It's going to be basic
4-3.
And Gerald's going to be in his typical three technique position, but I don't even know that Gerald's going to be a three down player for them. He may be a situational type.
And they're not expecting him to be. From the people that I've talked to in Carolina, they're saying they're switching to this hybrid 3-4-4-3 with Ron Rivera taking over as DC up there now. But they don't expect him to be the workhorse that we had
And they still have Kawan Short too.
Exactly.
You know.
So I think, just given all of that, I would presume Suh is going to get more, and that's also the way I want it to go.
You didn't know who Carolina had up front, but Donovan Smith knows they have Mario Addison.
Oh yeah,
for sure. Mario Addison has been a thorn in the side of Donovan Smith.
Yeah,
I mean, Terry Postal there too, isn't he?
Yeah, I think so.
That's a third defensive tackle. I mean,
yeah,
pretty good one. And I mean, nose tackle, but you're going to have him and Kawan Short taking time out of Gerald McCoy's business, whereas I don't see Bo Allen coming in and taking significant time away from Ndamukong Suh.
He might take it from Vita Vea
if he does. See, I had an asterisk there. He's going to take some from Vita Vea if he does, but I think Ndamukong Suh is going to be there every down, pretty much, if he can be on the field.
Yeah, I mean, and the guy's never missed a game due to injury, and you're talking about sacks.
Way to jinx him.
Well, I'm just going by the track record. I'm just looking at the media guide. Okay, I'm stating facts.
Okay.
And Ndamukong Suh has not missed a game due to injury. And Gerald McCoy, I don't think has played all 16 games in a couple years.
It's third year of high school.
Yeah. So I think just from a sheer games and availability standpoint, Ndamukong Suh is going to have a better chance of getting more sacks because of that, along with the position switch.
More snaps.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you want to say these guys are equal. Although, I would say, as a pure pass rusher, I would probably give the edge to Gerald McCoy just because he has that supreme get-off still.
I'm going to tell Ndamukong Suh you said that.
But I would say an all-around player, it's not close. I think Ndamukong Suh is a little bit better. When you even just look at the tackle numbers, he's got double the amount of tackles. Everything else is virtually the same.
Yeah. The thing is, Ndamukong Suh only had 1 year where he had double-digit sacks. It was as a rookie. He had 10 sacks.
Well, that's one more year than Gerald had.
That's correct. Although, you know, some would say, well, you have to round up because he had 9.5 1 year, right? You're going to round up?
No, you don't have to.
I agree.
Anyway, all right. Are we done? Is that it?
That's all for the questions this week. Appreciate you guys sending your questions.
Yeah.
You can do that on Twitter anytime now, and we'll look at them before the next podcast, which will be taped midweek next week, Wednesday, Thursday.
Yeah, whenever we can fly Brent back down.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so you can tweet those out to us at PewterNation. And we'll answer them. So we appreciate your questions.
I appreciate you not saying pound, Peter Nation. Scott's kind of old, like a grandpa.
Used to pound on the phone right there. You know,
we don't want them to do at Peter Nation, but they need to do hashtag Peter Nation. It's not a pound anymore,
You know who I miss?
Trevor?
His Uncle Stan.
Well, we all do. Yeah. You still know what happened to him.
Well, yeah, I don't know.
Oh, you missed the character Uncle Stan, still, or the real guy?
You still got that NDA that I signed the last time I was here?
All right, for Mr. Taylor Nutchecker Jenkins, for Matthew Matera, for our special guest, Mr. Brent Allen, make sure, Brent, where can they check you out at?
You can find us at the PewterCast on Twitter, Facebook, and subscribe to us on all the major podcasting platforms out there. We're about one every 2 weeks here through the off season, but then we ramp up. We have 4 shows a week going through the season.
Wow, look at that.
Live call-in show right after the games on Sunday nights, a couple of midweek shows, and then one kind of right up before the game starts. So,
and your PewterCast podcast, wildly popular. You also had a Guest of the Year award winner last year. You presented a trophy to a few weeks ago. Could you talk about that a little bit?
We did. He was actually the repeat media personality of the year, and he used to work for Pewter Report.
Mm-hmm.
Oh wait, that's a different award.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
won Trevor Sycamore.
Okay, let's go to the Guest of the Year.
But the Guest
award.
Of the Year fan voted. We just put it out there. It's the nominees are selected by a nominating committee, and Mark Cook was on that.
Outstanding.
And Mark Cook won by the fans.
Which is
over
I'm the
13...
fourth like person on our own podcast, yes. But yet I was the number one liked one on not even my own podcast.
Yeah. Well, if you win it this year, you can put like, you know, Captain Interruption. You can have that engraved at the bottom.
It's a meme at this point. People just love attacking you online. Yeah. Like it's not so much they believe it, but
it's like
it's
a Bronx
just something
cheer.
Every week you wake up, you get online, you kind of crap on Mark Cook. It's just
but you know what? For everyone that craps, I got 5 or 6 that say they like me, so that's all that matters.
Follow me on Twitter at TJenkinsTampa.
Yeah, exactly. Go ahead and give people your Twitter handle there so we can get over 500.
Yeah, all right. So hold on here. So, Matt, how many Twitter followers do you have? Matt, how many followers do you have on Twitter?
Almost at 700. I'm at 696.
Okay. And Taylor, how many do you have?
I'm sitting around 520 right now.
Loser.
Okay. So you're a little bit behind. All right, so we're going to throw out the Twitter handles for both of you guys. You're gonna have the opportunity here.
You can only follow one. Just kidding. You can follow both of them.
Pick one, yeah. Follow both of them for sure. Get these guys over 1,000. Not more than 1,000, but just 1,000. Mm-hmm. Get them to that point.
Yeah, we'll cap it at 1,000. We don't want them to get too popular and their heads get any bigger than they are.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Your Twitter handle?
Mine is at TJenkinsTampa. Very easy to remember.
At TJenkinsTampa. Okay. Matt?
Mine is at Maddie. 4_Matera2.
I have a feeling who's going to get more followers. Right. I can't even remember that.
Driving in the car, listening to the Pewter Nation podcast. Well, I know Taylor's.
Yeah, so. Taylor's is easy. Matt's
Maddie4_Matera2. Okay. Rhymes, so.
All right.
There you go.
There we go.
All right. And Scott Reynolds, your Twitter?
At Pewter Report.
Oh, boy.
Pewter Report.
Yeah. All right. For Taylor Jenkins, Brent Allen, Matthew_4216. And for Scott Reynolds, I'm Mark Cook, and we'll see you next week for another edition of the Pewter Nation Podcast.
Out.
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 Out.